Try that again. Good morning, everyone. I'm still so happy to see you all here. My name is Nicole Golden. I am the director of the Youth Prosperity and Security Initiative here at CSIS, which we launched a few months ago in partnership with the International Youth Foundation. So very pleased to see so many friends and colleagues and new faces here with us this morning for a very important, timely, and exciting conversation. Young people are transforming our world here and now. Words from the UN Secretary General not too long ago, and I think they are really apt and are significant and signal and representative of the kind of change that we're seeing in a lot of the rhetoric and discussion around young people, not only as the next generation, but as the generation here and now. And who can argue when, depending on who you ask, anywhere from 1.2 to 1.8 billion young people, youth, are here on the planet today. So it's a big number, and it's an exciting population. In his second term, five-year agenda, the Secretary General put working with and for women and young people front and center on his agenda as one of his top five priorities. And a concrete and very significant action against that commitment was to appoint first ever Special Envoy on Youth, Ahmed Al-Andawi. So we are thrilled to have him with us today to talk about his agenda and moving forward, what we can expect to see for and with young people at the United Nations. He has been an advocate, a champion, a committed policy and practitioner on youth issues for many years now. He has most recently been working with the League of Arab States and the Arab League, and previously worked with UNFPA and Save the Children. He is committed to and passionate about participation, setting up NGOs for young people's participation, not only in his home country of Jordan, but setting up the International Youth Council in New York. So without further ado, Ahmed, welcome. We're so happy you're here. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Nicole, and it's a great pleasure to be with you today. My first visit to Washington, D.C., the last time I was here, it was the election night of President Obama for the first time in 2008, so it's good to be back and to share with you some updates from the United Nations and about the agenda of youth in the United Nations. Thank you very much for your interest in the United Nations and the work of the United Nations in youth. As kindly mentioned, it's an exciting time to work in youth issues and in development in general. We're talking about maybe 980 days left to the MDGs and a lot of discussion about the post-MDGs, and we're talking about the second term of the Mr. Ban Ki-moon as the SG of the United Nations. And in his second term, the Secretary General of the United Nations announced three initiatives, part of his commitment to work with and for young people. One of these initiatives is called the UNV Youth Modality, you know, the United Nations Volunteer Program. With that, there's a youth modality now being discussed, and hopefully it will be launched soon. The second is a system-wide action plan that I will come to discuss it later, and the third, appointing an envoy in youth issues. And let me start by demystifying the word envoy. I come from Jordan, and the Arabic culture, the word envoy means literally a messenger, to be a messenger, which is great. But I mean, a messenger is somebody who takes a message from two, right? There are two ends, and there's a message. So there's a message, and there's a sender, and there's a receiver. What is the message? It should be the message of the United Nations, the UN work in youth. And who is the sender? Supposedly the United Nations system, and the receiver, young people. They are either 1.2 if you start measuring with 15 years old, 1.8 if you start with 10 years old. Well, with that scene, I'm trying to describe my role for you and try to bring you closer to understand how this position and an envoy in youth in the United Nations work. Usually an envoy in the United Nations is this position is created for conflict zones and areas. And some people think that there's an envoy for youth because youth might be a source of crisis now for some, and bringing conflicts and unrest in some places. But I believe it's a great opportunity, and this is the thinking that's driving the United Nations, that it's a great opportunity to invest in young people today. Go back to this messenger concept. To bring the message and the work of the United Nations closer to young people, first we need to know what is the work of the United Nations to young people. A piece of information providing what the UN at large is doing for young people does not exist easily, because the UN machinery is huge. There are so many funds, programs, initiatives at the national, regional, and global level. And sometimes it's very difficult to make this work accessible to young people, to bring all this work together in one place and try to bring an easy message for young people to understand the work of the United Nations for young people. So it's exactly that. I'm starting my work with making sure that we are repackaging the work of the United Nations and make it easier to follow, accessible, and like the word, readable even. So to put the message and the work of the United Nations in an easier way for young people. But it's not one-way communication. I'm not a PR guy who just try to promote the work of the United Nations to young people, although that's important. But I'm trying to encourage two-way communication from young people to the organization by bringing their voices back. But let's just have a quick review and overview about how the world looks today for young people. And I think it's, for many of you, you are already experiencing that, just talking about 1.2 or 1.8 billion young people living on our planet today, the largest ever youth population in the history of this planet. A planet that is suffering a lot today and that is not sustainable as we are consuming today and as we work today. And those who will suffer most are young people if we don't take actions today. This number is going to peak even in the next 20 years. Talking about just unemployment, and imagine that just last year, 74 million young persons on the planet were not employed, with no job opportunities, no access to education or training. It's not only 74 million that they do not have any opportunity now in terms of education or job opportunities, but it's more about some structural issues and problems in the labor market, that there are so many issues currently, even with the employed youth. And I was asking colleagues in the ILO, if you want to fix that, how many years we want? Just to fix how things look like today and to find job opportunities for these 74 million. We need 10, 15 years? Well, the good or bad news is in the next 15 years, another 425 million jobs need to be created. So there's no time, or we don't have the luxury to wait. And this is a pressing issue for all of us. And I think this puts a huge challenge that we are discussing the post-2015 development agenda. But it's not only about employment, it's also about participation. Because if we talk about education as a foundation and providing better education for young people, education that provide marketable skills and capabilities for lifelong learning, we are talking about what education will result to. Because education is not about young people demanding a transition to better job opportunities. What I understand very well, having spent 18 years in Tahrir Square, I was living in Egypt during the revolution, I understand very well that education will lead to political maturity as well. And people start demanding participation. They demand the institution to be more open for their participation. Go back to Egypt and Tahrir Square. I joined the launching event for the National Youth Survey in Egypt back December 2010. Just 2 months before the revolution. And one of the findings of the National Youth Survey in Egypt was that only 4% of Egyptian youth participate in any voluntary work. Only 4%. The number for young female Egyptians is 2%. And that was, I still remember the minister at that time who presented the numbers. She referred this number because young people are lazy, they are careless, they don't want to participate. It was just 2 months after that date, where young Egyptians responded actually in the street with hundreds of thousands protesting. I think sometimes policymakers, they fail to read numbers and they fail to analyze them. That was a sign of protest, not a sign of carelessness. Just 2 months later, we have seen what happened in Tahrir Square. And that was the response. That was the right number for me. This is when policymakers and institutions fail to listen to young people. Talking about a youth bulge now, especially in the global south, the institutions needs to be more accommodating for young people's demands for participation, not only job opportunities. This goes hand by hand. And that's a big lessons learned from what happened in Tahrir Square. With all that, I think there are great pressure, not only in the United Nations, but in everyone, to respond to these challenges and to this opportunity. Everybody's just talking about youth as a challenge, and sometimes I don't like that much talking about youth issues, because you propose it's an issue. I mean, it's in a way of, or talking about youth as beneficiaries only, or talking about youth as problems, or as threats, as... could be indeed. I mean, if you don't invest in this, a huge number of young people. But what we learned from the Asian Tigers as well, that in some studies, refer 50% of their the transformation that have in these countries, they refer to the fact that they enjoyed a youth bulge, a youthful community, and with the right policies and investments, they were able to transform their countries. So we tend sometimes to forget that this is a great opportunity. It's only if we miss to invest in this opportunity, it can be a threat. And this is what I believe that everybody is trying to respond to that. And the United Nations, indeed, is leading a new momentum for youth development, starting with, as I mentioned, the Secretary General's second term action, 5-year action agenda that includes working with and for young people. What does that mean, the work of the United Nations? As I said, it's again about having three initiatives. The second one that I mentioned briefly is something called System-Wide Action Plan in Youth. They call it in the United Nations because they like acronyms indeed. So SWAB in Youth. So the SWAB in Youth, what does it mean for that? Imagine an organization like the United Nations doing a great work at the different agencies and all levels for young people. Imagine if you really unite forces and join forces in this organization and you target youth issues holistically and collectively. I think this is part of what strengthens the soft power of the United Nations and to test models and provide a more progressive and traditions for youth development and will allow us to do this shift that we are talking about, moving youth from being problems to becoming opportunities. The System-Wide Action Plan Assembly in Youth, and a reason why I'm super excited about it, that for the first time ever in the history of the United Nations, we are having an instrument for coordination on youth issues. So this is an action plan bringing all UN agencies together and work plan to address youth issues. And I think this is great. This will help me a lot. As the Secretary General of the United Nations described my role as a harmonizer, of course, it's an easy role in the United Nations to act as harmonizer. Kidding. Huh? But when you come to the United Nations to act as a harmonizer and at the same time you come with a system-wide action plan, I feel my mandate has been given an instrument to make the harmonization more systematic, not seasonal, and to bring everybody on board. And I was positively surprised. I was joining the United Nations, and everybody told me it's a big system, it's intimidating, just like it's threatening, nobody will cooperate. Let me share this with you. I'm really positively surprised by the response from all head of agencies who supported my mission in the first 2 months. And we have put in a work plan, and some agencies have sent people to work with me, and they are all open. And there is clear understanding in the UN system now that we need to work together. My office and my role is not about implementing projects and programs. It's about having somebody has a helicopter view about the work of the United Nations in youth issues. Somebody who can connect the dots and can tell the story in an easier way for all our partners, the youth, and everyone. And this is exactly my focus. So we are coming with a system-wide action plan that should allow for a more systematic coordination between the UN agencies. And personally, I have built in the first month my work plan, and which I call it actually demystifying again what does envoy mean here. And I put it based on 4 key principles that I believe they are the most relevant at the moment to support youth development, starting with the participation. And by participation, I mean allowing for more access to the United Nations, allowing young people to access the organization and to interact with the organization. We are talking about, again, 1.2 billion young persons. And having one envoy to represent their voices, because sometimes I like to describe my role, not only the UN envoy for youth, but the youth envoy for the United Nations. But this will be a bit misleading if I say that I can carry the voices of 1.2 billion. I believe in mechanism. I'm personally obsessed in mechanisms, because I believe if you want really to bring people on board, you should create meaningful mechanism for that. So it's not the job of one person or one entity. It's more about creating meaningful mechanisms for them. Starting from the national level with having advisory boards for the UN country teams to what we are discussing now, establishing a regional economic and social youth forum at the regional level and having a global ECOSOC, economic and social youth forum, to have young people discussing the issues being debated at the Economic and Social Council. Soon, there's another exciting announcement. The United Nations will announce a United Nations panel on youth, covering different sectors and from private sector to media, academia, youth organization, to not only advise the UN, but also to enlarge the network of advocates for young people. This led me to the second point of my work plan, the second principle, which is advocacy. And with advocacy, we are talking about the post-2015 development agenda. And do you know that youth were there in the whole process so far, in the inputs of the consultation? If you go to My World 2015, you will find the majority of respondents are young people. My role here, just to make sure that youth are not only in the inputs of this consultation, but they are prioritizing the output and the final product as well. And make sure the post-2015 prioritizing youth issues. I'm sure we'll have more discussion on that. The third principle is partnership. For me, go back just to the unemployment situation. Do you think governments alone can solve it? Or private sector alone or civil society? It's only by creating multi-stakeholder partnerships and youth development that we can respond to address whether the challenges or to capitalize all the assets we have. And the fourth is to do all that, again, we'll go back to the fact that we need more harmonization for the work of the United Nations. I like the term harmonization. I know any Chinese here. The term harmonization is very deep-rooted in the Chinese culture. And I believe it's time to have a better harmonization between the UN agencies and the great thing that we are getting an excellent response from all UN agencies to support this joint exercise of making the work of the UN more accessible to everyone, partners and youth. These are some of the updates, developments with the UN Working Youth. I'm sure there are other questions. I look forward to your questions. I left some of the things maybe for more interactive dialogue, but I just wanted to start with this, allow you know, more about what we are discussing now in the United Nations. And again, it's so great to be with you here in DC, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you. Youth organization and youth activists, it's like a second birth certificate because you are being recognized for your presence and existence and contribution. And I think that's what IYF mainly was focusing by providing, is to provide an opportunity where you recognize and celebrate the success of young entrepreneurs who contributed to their community. I think this is extremely important. As we talk about enabling environment for youth development, the issue of recognition remains very important. And then it gives you an opportunity, of course, to learn and interact with other youth, young entrepreneurs from different parts of the world, from private sector to participation, to working in sexual and reproductive health, and variety of issues. So I think that's what I enjoy the most, is the issue of meeting others. And it gave me more visibility for my work at that time, back in 2008. I believe it's very important. We are developing a kind of models for what a youth-enabling environment can be. And for me, it's indeed one of the main elements and core elements of that is to inspire others by showing that you can do it. Because what an entrepreneur is not a person who just wait others to act, right? The entrepreneur at the end of the day who is somebody who understands very well that, the laws might not be very friendly for youth, and there are funding issues, difficulties, there are problems, there are lack of support, lack of interest sometimes. And despite of all that, get things done. This is the interview. Otherwise, I mean, it will be somebody waiting others to act and duly act to their actions. But an entrepreneur for me is somebody who realizes, and despite all the challenges and issues, still can do something and contribute and look to the assets we have. And to be honest, I'm carrying this with me to the United Nations a bit now, because when I developed my work plan, you can start putting a very ambitious work plan that asking others, right? Because we tend to ask, you should contribute that, you should do this, and you should put $2 million here. And you I think with that, people will panic if you start telling them, okay, you should bring that. My approach was different. I took my time to study the UN very well and to meet with everyone, to listen, to join all agencies, the planning of my work plan. I just was focusing the first year on repackaging things and to look what we have, not what we need. And to start getting things done based on what we have. And I think that was a very good shift in the way we think, because if we start putting the wish list for what you want, it will never end. But was mainly focused in the assets we have. And it's amazing when you see an organization like the United Nations, what it has. Sometimes it just requires, again, connecting things and repackaging them. And it's amazing what the result will be.
It's amazing. You talk about how you took your time and you definitely maximize the 24 hours of the day, because you astonishingly were able to get through a system, a work plan within really no time, and that buy-in. Talk about that first month, and how you managed to pull this together. And what you say was took your time, but really you did it at a record pace.
I think it's just something interesting to share, because we all sometimes have this kind of tough deadlines. In my first meeting with Mr. Ban Ki-moon, he told me, okay, I want a work plan in the first month. I mean, you have 1 month to give me a work plan. Looking to me, I still don't have staff. I barely could have an office. And then I have this schedule of meetings, sometimes having 10 to 12 meetings every day. I broke all my personal records, to be honest, in the first month. I was sleeping two, sometimes 3 hours or 4 hours a day. And then running to meetings and staying very late to the office and trying to digest and reflect, then put things. And was writing, I mean, my contribution reflect hugely very early in the morning at 4 a.m. And at the end, we hosted 5 planning meetings. I invited all our colleagues in the UN agency. I shared it with the interagency network. And I was very, even I tweeted for ideas from young people. And I wanted to make sure that everybody feel an ownership to this post and that this, kind of collecting and trying to really reflect the whole spirit of bringing all the UN together and put it in one work plan. So I was happy that we managed to put something that I'm personally satisfied about. And the SG has fully endorsed Sir Ban Ki-moon in his speech at the EcoSecute Forum. He asked all international leaders and the senior officials of the United Nations to support the work plan and get it done in 1 month. Was challenging. But now when I look at it, I think I'm not planning to add anything soon. I think it just to put this ambitious yet realistic work plan just on a track. And I think it was a very interesting experience. But just to add thing, again, I think my experience in the Arab League and seeing how intergovernmental organization functions internally helped me a lot to navigate in the UN. Of course, that's a way bigger organization. But it's the same mindset, how you navigate with that and how you make sure that you bring everybody on board, because this is the only guarantee and making sure that things will be implemented in the future.
I would be amazed that you actually found your way around the buildings in a pretty good fashion. I think that would have been number one on my work plan. If I got through that within the first month, I think I would have been pretty proud of myself. So it's impressive. So obviously you're somebody that doesn't require much sleep to be incredibly productive and effective. But is there anything else, is there any one thing that we should know about you that we haven't, seen in a bio or heard you talk about yet today as you go forward in this role?
Maybe something we shared yesterday with the students at George Washington University, because some people asked me how you get this. And it just survived, because I was not driven youth work by opportunities. was always driven by my passion and by cause always. And it's amazing, and this has become a message for me to everyone, because I think when you are driven by your passion, by your cause, life will be way more rewarding than you becoming very opportunistic in the way you think. That I think some dedication and some passion will be maybe... when I look back to some of the things I have done, I have done, I mean, not very wise decisions regarding my career at some point, but I realized later that they were very wise at the long term if you follow your passion. And just to remember that we only live once, so we better follow our passion in this. And this is something I keep reminding myself every day, that I would not have been here if I was not given enough dedication to the youth issue. And I'm sure many of our colleagues here understanding very well and joining me in this.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So we just want to follow up on a few points that you mentioned, and then we'll turn it over to our audiences. Your work plan, four keywords: participation, advocacy, harmonization, and partnership. And when talking about, I really like how you reflected on your role as an envoy, as a messenger, and how you were realistic about the fact that you can't realistically represent the voices of 1.2 or 1.8 billion young people. I like to say I was looking at the top 10 Twitter follower people. And, you know, so the top 10 altogether, including, you know, Justin Bieber, Lady Gaga, President Obama, if you look at the top 10 altogether, their followers are 200, about a little more than a quarter of a million. Yeah. So when you think about, you know, representing those voices, can you talk a little bit more? You started to, about how you think about that scale and how you think about not only representing those people, but getting that message out, and how you're leveraging platforms that already exist, and where technology comes in, and just how you're thinking about that platform.
If we think globally, I think this will be a bit challenging to bring everybody here. But I believe in the subsidiarity principle in youth work, meaning that, I mean, what can be and what should be done at the national level, at the local level even, needs to be dealt with at the national level. And not everything needs to be regional, not everything has to be global. But we need to make sure that we are working at the national level. Luckily, the UN does not lack mechanisms at the national level. Have enough offices and organizations dealing with young people at the national level. So I think the whole spirit of communicating and bringing the UN closer to young people, this should start at the national level. That's a very important block of our work. If we make sure that we are promoting more mechanism at the national level, the UN country teams, with the United Nations, we will be able to achieve that. And then, promoting more mechanism at the regional and the international level. But again, one of my key focuses is making sure to open the UN at the national level for more youth participation. Mm-hmm. And not only youth to be the recipient of funding or just beneficiaries for our programs, but to have youth as full partners. This is something very important. I'm always saying that the United Nations had less employees than McDonald's. Huh? You know that. And yet, if you go to McDonald's, you still wait in a queue to get a sandwich or something. So the UN here is not about serving directly all the time people. It's more about facilitating the services, more about bringing people together to provide these services to others. At the national level, this is very true, because at the national level, the UN work with the government, work with civil society, and the UN sometimes have more ability to test things and to lead by example and to provide a bit more progressive sometimes ideas in partnership with the governments and civil society. So I think this is the added and the soft power of the United Nations. And in youth work, I mean, this is not exactly your question, but I'm thinking now about the term youth policy. You are familiar with the term youth policy, right? Just go back to the 90s. Anybody use that term? I mean, it was not used. It was not even in the literature. If you go back to research and Google, what is youth policy in the 90s, it was not there. It's because something called World Program of Action for Youth in the United Nations, it was in 1995. Now, suddenly, we have a global momentum in youth policy. And everybody started to catch up with that, and the government started developing youth policies and strategy. So I think this is part of what the UN is providing, is to provide an ideas that then they become the norm, and they become the trends that everybody wants to to provide them. And I think this is an added value for the United Nations. We should continue to work that. And to reaching out to young people at the national level is extremely important before thinking always about the global initiatives.
It's a really great point. In fact, in my wearing my former hat at USAID, and when we were developing USAID's policy on youth and development, we absolutely looked to the World Program of Action on Youth as an inspirational sort of foundational document that had been written and was really, you said, you know, pretty ahead of its time in 1995, coming out with that. So we talked about the scale of youth and participation and advocacy, and you've already been interacting with thousands of young people at platforms and online and in Google Hangouts and in many ways. And I'd be curious to hear, what are some of the shared values or commonalities that you've heard from or observed among the young people globally that you've dealt with? And at the same time, recognizing, as we do, that youth are very different, a very diverse group. Within that 1.8, 1.2 billion are young people of, you know, varying backgrounds and experiences and religions and so on and so forth. So how are you particularly thinking about participation and advocacy for minority youth or youth that have been the most marginalized in their societies? Love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. First, in my belief that youth aspirations are very much similar. If we are talking about they all aspire good education, they all aspire decent job opportunities, more participation opportunities. And just look to the My World 2015 now. Look, education comes first everywhere, in almost all countries. And seems for decent job opportunities. So I think the question here is not the end goals. I mean, it's not the aspiration of young people, because they all aspire to be treated in dignity, to human rights, to be respected. So these are universal values in every sense that everybody wants to realize that. Where we stand in relation to achieving these are different. The complexity from a country to another is different. The political system has a large impact in the situation of young people, and some research showed that, I mean, democracies are tend to function way better in terms of youth development than dictatorships. So this is another issue, understanding how youth, I mean, what kind of issues that they are facing in their countries. So I think it's, the question is not about the aspiration for end results. It's more about where we stand now in this particular country, and how we can do, I mean, some progress. And I believe that the UN is doing that already through something called UNDAF, UN yep. Development Assistance Framework, which is putting a work plan for the United Nations, all United Nations agencies, for 5 years in every country. And this is trying to respond to the situation, the current situation of a country. That's why even the system-wide action plan that we're talking about, the global one, has put a lot of emphasis in my own work plan about working in marginalized youth. And one of the issues about marginalized youth, that there's, and this is very important to share it here as well, and in Washington with think tanks and research centers, that we don't have enough research sometimes about who are the marginalized youth and how we can work with marginalized youth, because we can identify the groups, but some interventions and issues, how to target and how to address this issue, we are still lacking behind them in terms of having a solid understanding about the marginalized youth and addressing their issues programmatically. So this is an area, the system-wide action plan puts a lot of emphasis on the marginalized youth and trying first to enhance our understanding about how we can work with that. And we are just discussing recently with Columbia University and other researchers around the world how we can enhance the research on the issue of marginalized youth, so we can, this research can inform the programs of the United Nations for young people. So we will not end up only talking about the more privileged young people. Yeah. To be honest, this is one of my concerns all the time, just to make sure when we talk about 1.2, we are not talking about the most globalized, those who have good access to education. And our program should not serve only the business class travelers, and we should, I mean, look to the whole plane, look to the whole, and make sure that, I mean, we are serving everyone on board, and this is This is very important to realize. So I think there's a discussion they're taking here. And I am really hoping that the system-wide action plan will provide an instrument to enhance our delivery for young people, especially marginalized youth. And we are always open for ideas, especially in this under-researched area also.
Well, somebody that often, almost always, I should say, sits at the back of the plane, and it seems like almost always in a middle seat, I absolutely appreciate your view on this and your real attention and focus to the full plane. Picking up on something you said about that we don't know enough about who are the marginalized youth, I think that it's a really good point, and it reminds me of something else we've been talking about, which is we actually don't know a lot about young people's well-being in a lot of ways at scale. And thinking about the Millennium Development Goals in particular in the post-2015, how do you see that platform and that process? And as you said, hopefully not only young people's participation in the process, but prioritized in the outcomes. I like the way you phrase that. In helping push that research agenda and push that data gathering agenda or effort, if you will, so that we can better serve young people going forward?
This is a very interesting issue now. Who doesn't know about post-2015 development agenda? I think it's impossible now. Huh?
Yeah.
I met Karim also from the Millennium Campaign, and when they started the whole campaign about post-2015, my first question to her was, did you really imagine it will take this global momentum? It was even surprising for her how it became, everywhere, leading by national offices, the UN, people participating online, offline, in different consultation. And just a quick reflection in the post-2015 development agenda. First, I think this is providing, again, a proof that we are talking about a global citizenship now. Because if you are a citizen in a country and you are joining the election and voting and everything of constitution, it's exactly in the same sense you are contributing to setting the constitution of development globally. So this is a global citizenship. You are voting for what do you think is important in the next 15 years. This is, as we said, it's important. But having said that, talking about the word we want is a bit tricky as well, because maybe we have more than 200 goals proposed so far for the world we want. And I think it's time for some expectations management when it comes to the post-2015 development agenda. But also about understanding our roles in that. I'm always skeptical about trying to sell or promote the world we want initiative. As you tell us, what do you think is important? I think this is a wrong question. You shared with us your concerns here to develop not agenda, and I just would like to elaborate on this. For me, this is not agenda. This is a contract, as a contract suggests. Exactly like the term social contract. This is a development contract. Why is a development contract? Because again, it's not the job of the United Nations. No. You tell us what you think, and then the UN is going to implement and reach us and to the world we want 15 years. It's not the job only of member states, or civil society, or private sector. This is development contracts, and we are all signing in this contract. If you are sharing your views, then you are becoming part of this contract. And then everybody has a share in reaching that goals. So it's not about one party delivering for others. And this is a very important way of looking at it. So I think now we are in the process of consultation, but we are also signing in that contract, in the sense that we all have a share in making sure that we are reaching the world we want. Post-2015 is not a wish list or a Christmas tree, we just show what we think is important. We need to be part of that and part of the implementation. This is part of my messages all the time, that I'm sure that when we talk about the post-2015, this is a golden opportunity to reinforce a global citizenship and setting a development, world development contract. With that, we should envisage our rules in the implementation and making sure that whether you have a small intervention or smaller project or a global one, to align it always in line with what we are discussing as the world we want. So this is the way I see it. We're young people in that, I think it's clear. They are the people who will be going to the labor market in the next 15 years. I have another way of looking at the post-2015. Imagine today the generation of MDGs. A young child who were born in 2000, And now we're talking about 2013, and 13 years old child or adolescent. 15 years will be when we enter the post-2015. And this will be the generation of the MDGs and post-MDGs. So I think we need to think of them as well as people who are, I mean, their lives are improved, hopefully, with the MDGs. But we are entering a new era where we are talking about continuing investing in them and receiving many more youth. So I think post-2015 is something I'm very excited about, but I'm always trying to put it in a way where, I mean, this is not about somebody telling others what they should be done, but it's about everybody being important.
It's interesting when you think about how MDGs, you know, ultimately link to the work of the UN to and member states and a lot of the organizations in this room to help reach those goals or whatever the new framework looks like. You know, interesting, going back to one point, and we're getting ready to soon open it up to questions, so start having them ready in your minds. Going back to the way the Secretary General framed the prioritization of young people and women by and with and for, and part of your work being about coordination and harmonization, can you talk a little bit about how your work plan and how you see your work linking up with or coordinating with UN Women and UNFPA and other organizations that are in particularly thinking about young women, female youth, and adolescent girls, and how you see that connection in your work? I think
you know, there's a task force already for young women and adolescents led by, co-chaired by UNICEF and UNFPA and joined by UN Women. So there's a mechanism now for coordination of that. Yeah. And if you look to my plan and the system-wide action plan, there are great focus on the, in addressing this issue. Of course, there are tremendous challenges here and different challenges faced by young women. But I believe having this mechanism now in place, I'm coming to bring the United Nations together, not by invitation, but by they are already there working together, and I think there's great room for improvements here in the way we deliver. Tell you some of the challenges here that in programming and designing programs, sometimes we don't lack ideas or actors or beneficiaries, but we lack money sometimes, right? So ideas are there, great players and implementers, but sometimes there are no enough allocation to reflect the commitments we have for youth and young adolescents and girls to programs and to mechanisms. So I believe this work comes to advocacy as well in the partnership because it's time to explore how we can make sure that there are more allocation and more contribution to financially to youth issues. Not only, as we tend to hear all the time, that youth are important, youth create, youth are the future, they are the present. It's time to reflect that financially as well in the way we design and to work with women organization and youth organization. And if you just look, the least funded, I would say, among all civil society groups are the youth-led organizations. We have all this slogan all the time, nothing without us, without for us, without us. Nothing for youth without youth. And then if you look to youth-led organizations, they suffer just to find... because for me, youth is not only about providing services to young people. It's more about having them participating. And youth-led organization is just a laboratory where you practice democracy at the very grassroots level. And this is extremely important. They will do some mistakes. They might not be as professional, but they are passionate. And this is the double piece. A professional and passionate is the formula to work in civil society. If you are passionate enough, nobody will take you seriously. And if you are professional enough, you might get funding, but you might, not channel that funding in the right direction. But I think you need to be passionate and professional to work with issues. And one of my focus, and talking about the World Youth Conference, May 2014, hosted by the government of Sri Lanka, and was just discussing with the Minister of Sri Lanka and some youth groups. And I asked them, what are your expectations from a World Youth Conference gathering 1,000 youth organizations? They said, post-2015. I said, okay, everybody's talking about it. So, we said, talking about another declaration, another recommendations.
forum to call others to act. For me, this is an opportunity to have a pause and just think about us. It's time to have global youth movement, a global youth movement that's bringing everybody on board and to fix the way we do youth work now. I think the right questions that should be asked now for the youth-led organization, how they can join forces and coordinate so they can have a stronger voice in the international youth international development debates. And maybe just another quick reflection. If you follow the economic theory, and look to all the forums, events, opportunities for young people, it's to a large extent driven by suppliers, not by the clients. Just more about suppliers providing opportunities in different areas. And I think only by strengthening the youth movement, the youth-led organization, we will be able to have a good balance between those who supply, provide funding, programs, opportunities, those who are receiving them, and to have a kind of good partnership. So one of my focus, and hopefully by the World Youth Conference, we'll have a good opportunity to bring together so many youth organizations. We're talking about a number of 1,000 participants. And I think that will be a great opportunity not to issue another declaration or we have enough, but maybe just to do this pause and think of how we're going to fix the way we work together so we can make the noise that we should do. So everybody start listening carefully to what we are saying.
It's a really important point that you raise, a number of them, but in particular the idea of not being afraid to fail and giving that space to I often... one of the Steve Jobs quotes, that it's the ones who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are the ones who will. And sometimes you have to have that space to be a little bit crazy and maybe not necessarily succeed straight off the bat. And you talked about partnerships, which was the one of the other pillars, four pillars. So we have a number of folks in this room who are with different organizations and young people themselves as partners. And you talked about the challenge of financing, of being able to do what needs to be done. So how are you thinking about partnerships with different organizations, and where do you see that moving forward?
One of the things that we are exploring is a global trust fund for youth development. And this, of course, under discussion and consultation with different foundations. But I think it's part of what we can do is to continue. Partnership is very much linked to advocacy, to advocate for more attention to youth issues and more education and financing for youth programs. At some point, I hope it will be soon, to bring foundations along with the UN agencies and youth-led organizations to one place to discuss the current scene, how it looks like, and how we can... What kind of possible ideas and initiatives that we can take to bring the partnerships and to be based on a solid kind of financial capability. But it's not only that. I think by allowing this opening channels between youth-serving institution, youth-led organization, UN agencies, member states, by bringing them on board and by having a meaningful discussion about how we can work together. This can be a seed for partnerships. And it's always amazing what happened in the receptions and coffee breaks. I think we need to bring the right people involved and to allow them to interact. We provide, hopefully, a structure for this interaction. But I think there's a great interest, especially with the youth-serving institution, and I know some of them... are joining here with the great experience they have, outreach. I think they can be with the United Nations agencies at the center of this facilitation for bringing more newcomers to become more interested in multi-stakeholder partnerships. We are having one now for education, the Global Education First Initiative, which I think is an excellent way of facilitating partnerships for education. We're having another one for employment with ILO, the World Bank. And I think another one for youth development in the sense of youth participation will be very much needed.
Yeah, Very exciting. So you've been on the job 2 months. So last question, what has been in this all 2 months, what's been the honest sort of challenge maybe you didn't foresee and going forward as you know, the potential challenges in your work? And with that, how can we support your efforts and hopefully help mitigate those challenges?
Well, a challenge and an opportunity, again, nobody's Chinese here, right? So I can't talk about China as I want. So I understood that the word crisis does not exist in Chinese. It's reflected by two symbols. Two words together, they make the word crisis. One is opportunity, and the second is problem. So if you put them together, it means crisis, which I think it's reflects exactly when you have a situation where it's just a bit challenging. You can't think of the opportunity you can get out of it. And the opportunity here and the challenge maybe, is to try to put infrastructure for youth work in the UN system. Mm-hmm. And by infrastructure, I talk about having enough coordination mechanisms at the national level, regional level, international level. It goes right as well for youth-led organization. I would love to see a strong counterpart to the United Nations from youth-led organization. I would love to see this happening. And I will continue to work closely with youth-led organizations to elevate their voices in this international development debate. So this might be a challenge that you don't have enough of these mechanisms, although you have a lot of programs. So to connect the dots might be a challenging exercise. But again, it's a very interesting one because once you finish or you start doing this, what I call infrastructure for coordination, you will be able to see and to create a new momentum because you are basically connecting all the like-minded, all the very interested, passionate people about your development together. And it's amazing how you can have this butterfly effect and asking others to do the same. So this is a challenge, but an opportunity at the same time.
Your optimism is infectious, and hopefully it'll serve you well. Yeah. Questions from the group and online. Don't forget, if you are following us on the webcast, please tweet questions using CSIS Youth. So with that, so questions? We've got some mics. Here in the front, Abby.
Hello, my name is Abby Flottemish with Atlas Corps, which is an overseas fellowship for emerging civil society professionals. And thank you very much and congratulations on your position. I agree, your enthusiasm is infectious and it's very exciting. And yesterday I was actually in a conversation with UNV and we were talking about volunteerism and two interesting pieces came out. One is when talking about the term volunteer, there can be negative and positive connotations. And also looking at the concept of volunteerism can also be in an island when it's not true. It's very integrated across a lot of different social issues, and it can be an economic driver, can drive community health. And I think youth is the same way, in that youth can have a positive, negative connotation, and it is also not an island. It's very integrated into a lot of issues. So I would love to hear what you consider your definition of youth is, and then to look at how is we as organizations and as individuals really drive this notion that youth is an integrated part of social development and it crosses all issues, and what can we be providing to drive that so people see the value of youth engagement?
Why don't we take one more question and then we'll give Ahmad a chance to answer. Is there another question? Yeah, up here.
Hi, Gum. Good morning. Congratulations on the appointment. I'm Fabian Koss, and I'm with the Inter-American Development Bank's Youth Development Program. And I couldn't agree with you more about taking that helicopter approach, and I hope you take that helicopter down to Washington, D.C. more often, because we'd love to have you at the IDB. And we work with many, if not all, of the UN agencies working on youth development issues. And I'm really interested in if you could, you know, tell us a little bit more about the work you're going to do with the SWAP, integrating all the different agencies.
Okay. I'll let you start with those two, since they're fairly big questions in themselves.
Well, sure, I agree with you. It's not an island. I think it's everywhere, similar to volunteerism. And the contribution of young people to development is clear. I think it's just more about binding both, as volunteerism is a tool as well to to have more young people joining the development agenda and to prove their relevance, I mean, and the way that they can get things done. I was in Papua New Guinea just a week ago and was looking to one of the streets. I spent a day in a slums, actually, and was thinking, because there are many holes in the streets, and for some of them, there are many young people sitting next to the street as well. So I was asking them, I mean, if five of us just go to the street and I'll try to fix it, it will not take an hour. But if the culture is to wait somebody to have a program or a bit just to fix the street, I think it's going to take a year or something. Though the thing itself, it will not take more than an hour. If five, six young men and women, they go to the street and start fixing it, I think that's what it takes to do change at this very, grassroots level. It requires a whole, a paradigm shift just in working with and supporting and inspiring and motivating young people to do things and to get things done. And in my belief, I mean, we cannot talk today about development without talking about young people. And any development program that is not really taken into account the demographic fact, first and foremost, and the inspiration and sometimes the frustration of young people will not fly. Basically, it's solo start there and continue there. You can't tell, if we go back quickly to the Arab Spring, and a lot of the frustration that, for me, I like to put it this way, young people are the driving force, but they are basically not in the driver's seat. So it's a lot, frustrating for many when you are moving the vehicle, but you don't know where it's going, basically because it's being turned all the time by someone else. So I think it's... this is, again, what I'm talking about. It's making an institution and the political process more youth-friendly to be more open for youth participation and for meaningful youth participation. This is indeed very important. If I go back to the SWAB briefly, soon there will be a website, a user-friendly website for presenting a sophisticated work plan. But I think part of the SWAB and youth is... about doing the housekeeping just internally of the UN system, making sure that we are figuring out how to work together. But it will be a way to communicate with others as well. And soon there will be a website that if you follow me on Twitter, I will be posting it as soon as it's ready. The SWAB is focusing on the issue of employment, entrepreneurship, political participation, protection of rights, as well as education, including sexual and reproductive health, and health, of course. These are the main focus of the SWAB. And the way we think about it is giving more acceleration for the implementation of the World Program of Action for Youth, which includes 15 priority areas. So in the SWAB, there are 5 priority areas out of the 15, trying to give some more acceleration for the work and provide a new momentum for implementing the World Program of Action for Youth. If you know that only 27 countries, they reported on the implementation of the World Program of Action for Youth. And I believe we need to encourage more member states to continue developing this. The SWAB is an instrument to make a coordination happen more systematically in the UN, but it's providing another very interesting opportunity to give a new momentum for youth policies at the national level. Because for me, it's very important to have this exercise at the national level. When the SWAB will be implemented at the national level, it's not a mental exercise. It's something that provides a roadmap at the headquarters, but the implementation and the plan itself, it will be tailored nationally according to the national priorities. At the national context, for me, I believe in the youth policies and strategies as instrument to bring all the line ministries, Ministry of Education, Health, Labor, and Planning, with all UN agencies. Up to my knowledge, we haven't invented any way yet better than a youth policy to bring all national actors together to discuss youth issues. So this is a good chapeau, this is a good umbrella way and entry point to bring everybody on board. What the system-wide action plan providing here is, again, another way of bringing the homework of the United Nations first to be figured out before we talk to governments and we advocate a stronger way for stronger and quality youth policies at the national level. I hope it will be available very soon, maybe in maximum 2 weeks' time it will be available online. And I encourage you all to look at it and to comment on it as well and to provide your feedback because it's meant to provide a, a basis for debate and dialogue as well.
Thank you. Why don't we go, Mr. Ambassador in the front.
Thank you very much for the excellent presentation. And as a politician, I had one question. Of course, the goal, your goal is to increase the effectiveness, the influence of youth in individual countries. The UN has one force, that is, it's the world conscious. It's the only platform in the world where all the ambassadors of the nations come together on a daily basis. And of course, they add to that the internet, that's the way Facebook, they influence decision making. But politicians, on the other hand, we learn are not sleeping. They are devising another model, that is to say, how can we neutralize youth movement before they become a political force or a threat? So this, all this introduction of participatory democracy and youth participation, it's nice, but what is the model you want to use to have the youth influence the few powerful political elite who make the decision, who ultimately take the decision in individual country? Unless you can influence the policy or the political decision-making process, it's nice to have youth movement, and the politicians are very clever people. They're going to say to the youth, look, we listen to you, we call you, you gave us advice, but when we decide, the youth is not there. So unless you have an effective model, you cannot influence and realize the goals and the priorities set forth for youth. Thank you.
Great question. How do we move from participation to influence? We'll take two more questions, young woman.
Yes, good morning. My name's Takumba Koike. I'm an Atlas Core Fellow from the UK. You mentioned about the fact that the youths are not an homogenous group, and you also talked about the marginalized group of youths. So my question to you is twofold. In terms of your work plans, what strategies and what ways did you engage the youths, especially the marginalized members of the youth population, into coming up with the work plan? And what strategies are you actually using in terms of implementing your work plan to engage the youth who are not able to access Twitter? I mean, I've just been able to go on your Twitter feed just now, and, you know, I think you need to tweet a bit more, you need to be more active on Twitter, and also, you know, about the website. But what about the youths and the marginalized groups that are not having access to that? Thank you.
Why don't we take one more question? Woman right
there. Yeah. Hi, Daniel Acker. A couple of years ago, I was working in Jordan with a youth organization, and you talked a little bit about the need to move sort of from a services giving model to more of a participatory grassroots model. And the group I was working with was very much trying to do that. But the big thing that I saw was difficulty trying to get the people the groups that we were working with to also be seeking that and not still be stuck in a service provision model. So, for instance, we did a survey of the youth we were working with, seeing, you know, what do you want more of? What can we do more? And a lot of the answers were things like more money would be nice, or more basic services, which wasn't part of the goal of the group to sort of create more involvement and create more democracy. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about just changing that environment of moving from youth engagement just being a services-driven thing to creating participation, and especially in groups where that's a fairly foreign concept. And also maybe talk a little bit about changing that from the government level as well, where you have many countries who have ministries of youth, but... what I saw, again, was when we would raise concerns that the youth had that were more than just asking for more resources, many times these ministries were not prepared to deal with the youth voice except in terms of perhaps providing more services. So just what are ways that that we can engage, whether from an NGO or governmental or UN level, on changing that that environment and that concept?
Great. Give you a chance to address
just
this.
Maybe if, because the question is very close to the ambassador as well, about talking about the model or the contribution of the UN here, I think we need and the plan is to advocate for what the elements of an enabling environment for young people can be to move from only participation to influence as well. And if you look to some core elements in this enabling environment, it will start with the legislation and the laws in a country, and to make sure that the laws are youth-friendly. I mean, in some countries, to establish a youth organization, you need to be over 30 years old. And is that friendly enough for young people? If it's a youth organization over 30, and if the parliaments are blocked for youth participation. So I think a careful look to that, laws and the legislative framework to make sure that it's supporting youth participation. That's a very important start. But again, you need to build the capacities, and the know-how question remains very important here. Passive young people and youth structure to organize, to volunteer, and to structure themselves in a way that they can influence. But participation is a very important starting point to influence. You need to participate and to group people. So you can figure out how you can make your voice heard and affecting the policy making and taking as well process. The know-how and the capacity building is another element in an enabling environment for young people. But if you have capacity building programs without mechanisms for participation, it's similar to training pilots that they will never take plane. And it's a waste of resources. And I believe training young people is never a waste of resources in this sense. It always leaves something there. But sometimes it creates frustration if you have skills and talents that you are unable to practice them. So I believe always training courses and capacity building programs, they have to be linked always to actions. And if they are not linked to action, we are missing something here, because it's not about doing more training capacity building programs. To at some point, it's becoming like industrializing the youth work to trainings and capacity building programs, and turning it to almost an industry itself, where youth work is a training, youth work is a conference. I think it needs to be linked to mechanisms and where young people, they can participate. So this is a third element, which is mechanisms. And the fourth for me is what we were discussing, support and financial, financing youth projects and providing support for youth projects, following this SOS, services, opportunities, and support model. And I think this is a fourth element. A fifth, what we mentioned in the beginning, actually, is recognition of recognizing youth success and the successful stories, and try to scale them up to address a national concern sometimes. So I think these are elements for a model that could make sure that we are moving from participation to influence. But it's also what we are talking about is that not all countries and youth everywhere standing in the same place. In some countries, you have very strong youth-led organization and even youth councils. In others, this is not possible so far. In others, youth are struggling to structure themselves in a way. So if you have the global overview about youth movements and youth structures, they are not standing in the same place so far. There are differences in where they stand and how they can influence. And some places, they are already influencing, actually, change. And Senegal, there's a rappers movement, youth rappers movement, that helped, changing the government there. And it's happening from place to another. Strategies for marginalized youth, maybe I just mentioned that briefly, this is not one strategy so far in the UN. But it's a focus in all, first in the system-wide action plan in youth and the programs that from different UN agencies. And sometimes when I present and find myself speaking on behalf of the UN, I want to go in more depth and start telling you about the great work of UNFPA with working with the marginalized youth, the work of UN Habitat in supporting youth-led organizations, providing funding, the work of UNICEF, that I'm sure you are familiar with. UNICEF is a brand that everybody knows. The work of ILO with the Global Network for Youth Employment. There are so many great programs, among other agencies indeed, that targeting that. And one of the discussions that we had in the last interagency network, again, the interagency network is all head of youth programs from all UN agencies. And there was consensus in that, that we need first to have better understanding and knowledge about how we program for young people, especially the marginalized group, and how we can enhance our delivery. Just maybe to add, maybe I mentioned that briefly, that I understand not all young people have access to information technology. And I'll tell you something even more daunting, that if you look to around 1.3 actually billion, they still do not have electricity. So talking about access to internet, while we are talking about 1.3 with no electricity, it sounds like if we are discussing the strawberry over the cake, and for them, why they still don't have electricity, and this is fundamentally. I mean, without electricity, even talking about charging your mobile and text messaging, which we think now is a traditional, it's not no longer an innovative way for reaching out to young people, sounds even very problematic. And out of the 1.3 billion, as we're talking about, another 70% are young people as well. So this is, again, about what I was talking about, that we don't want to end up serving the business class community, just to make sure that we are serving everybody on board. I think this is a great challenge. And this is something I liked as well about the post-2015 development agenda, that we are having the post-2015 online, but there were heavy consultation happening at the grassroots level in 50-some countries, where the UN staff, they went out and reached rural areas and places. They were out usually of the consideration for many years, and discussing with them and explaining to them what the UN mean. Last point to mention here, in all my missions abroad and all my travels, wherever I travel, I make sure that I'm not doing conferencing all the time. I'm not staying in the conferences. And this is something I've been doing now in all my trips so far, to make sure I'm meeting youth-led organizations, meeting youth and marginalized youth, like the one I met last time in Papua New Guinea, and then meeting the ministers of youth or the authorities and the government, are trying to create a dynamic and facilitate that at the national level. So this is another contribution here.
That's great. Yeah. Time for a few more questions. I'll go in the back.
Hey, I'm Marvin Matthew. I'm a senior at the University of Maryland. I'm 22 years old, so I'm really interested in what you're talking about and what you're doing. I really found interesting the idea of entrepreneurship and the case for it on the international level, on how we can catalyze young people to actually be the solution as opposed to be part of the problem. And I'm looking forward to the SWAP internet platform as a place to crowdsource information so we have access to it. That was actually my original question. But the second question I'm coming to is, what are we doing to open access to these UN, organizations? Right now, I'm actually working on the access issue in terms of technology. I have a program I'm working on with some college students called A Slice of the Pie, and we're working with a $25 computer and trying to get that to local communities all around the world to catalyze their access to information and working with electricity and internet. But what I've found is that once we can break the barrier of, like, you know, knowing who to contact at the United Nations or, like, in a MasterCard Foundation, they can be very helpful in accelerating our work. So I just wanted to put that out there, that we should really, like, in your capacity and whatever we can do, we should look to open source that so young people like me have access to it, so the work we're doing can really be accelerated, and so that 1.3 billion people that don't have access to electricity or the 70% without access to internet, we can make that happen and kind of wrap everybody in.
Yeah, I would love to learn more about your work, actually, and this is something that we're exploring, how we can, parts of my work is to be the connector here, just to make sure that whatever ideas we keep receiving, we are linking them with the concerned UN agency and this. And I would love to learn more about your work. Maybe we can have some chat about it. And then the issue of making the UN more accessible to young people is one of my top concerns. You will find it everywhere in all my speeches, all my work. And everything I mentioned, I think that the UN has to be easier for young people in the way to follow it. And sometimes I tell them that we need to make it a bit funkier so they can, instead of all the acronyms, instead of all this that I start using myself, I'm trying to force myself to use the real name sometimes without using the acronym. And surprising for me, MDGs for many, they don't know it. It's not surprising, to be honest. I think we take it for granted sometimes that this is MDGs, this is the post-2015, This is the SWAB news. This is the SDGs and so make it easier, because I don't think it's only about informing them that the MDGs is important. The way I see it is a contract again, in a sense that it provides a kind of orientation or directions for anyone who would like to work in development to align their, even the very grassroots kind of interventions, in line with the global efforts achieve larger goals. And I think this is a very interesting way of seeing that we are all our work is fitting in a larger picture. Yeah. And this is the great thing about having a development agenda globally, that whatever you do at the national level, at the very grassroots level, can be aligned with something global to achieve way larger goals. And we keep hearing the word changing the world. Let's change the world. And for me, to be honest, it's not about changing the entire world. It's about changing something in this world. And I think everybody can do it. And if you look to all innovators who really changed the world, they start about just changing something. Started with linking only students in one campus and ended up to changing and linking up all together in Facebook, right? This is how it starts. Start about something local. And I think the global or thinking global and act local makes a lot of sense with MDGs and post-MDGs now.
And just to follow up very, very quickly on that, I'm just curious, when you're thinking about, obviously we've talked about the MDG agenda, the post-2015, whatever you want to call it, and in a few months, in September, the UN General Assembly, and just in thinking about sort of, concrete actions, I'm wondering if there's anything you're thinking about or that you can hint us at that may be different or funkier this year at UNGA now that you're on board to open up even the UNGA as sort of the next big platform.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the toughest, you choose the toughest place to make it funky, the GA. there are so many. it's a bit difficult to make it funny. Although the other day we hosted a jazz concert for Mark Miller, actually, who came and played at the General Assembly, and everybody was dancing. Right. Just seeing like people dancing in the General Assembly doesn't happen every day. So that was a funky thing to start with. But with this General Assembly, what I'm trying and to work with member states, and I'm telling most minister and permanent missions, that to this GA, they have to be youth part of the official delegations. Mm-hmm. And they have to come. To that, and the UN has, and UNDESA, they have a program called the UN Youth Delegate Program, facilitating to all member states who are interested to bring youth in their official delegations. And we are trying to make that program for the youth delegates a bit funky, bringing them with some of the world's leaders to meet with and to be part of the official delegation. So I'm really hoping that more governments, member states, will respond to our call and they will join this program, because I think we are doing our share in this. But it's at the end, it's the political will and the decision of governments and member states to decide of bringing young people in their official delegation. The UN is very much welcoming having youth coming to the this year's GA, because it's a special one. With the, it will not be in the General Assembly Hall, by the way, because it's closed for renovation very soon. So it will be in a smaller room. We hope that will not be an excuse for not bringing young people. But it will be a very important one discussing the SG report for the post-2015 development agenda.
Well, brilliant. Well, thank you. Yeah. Ahmed, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you all for being here. Thanks for those online. And we certainly wish you the best and are very excited that you've joined us here today and look forward to all your exciting plans.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for the CSIS and the International Youth Foundations. And hope we'll be always able to be in touch. And thanks.
Thank you all. Thanks. Thank you.